One of the primary purposes of the recent Interim Committee on Public Lands was to examine the management practices and goals of our public forest. Even though, for the main part, this is federal land, it is of the utmost importance that Oregonians be aware of how these lands are being managed and that they participate in encouraging modern management techniques. HJM number 4 sums up the conclusion to the Interim Committee on Public Lands and the House Committee on Natural Resources regarding the timber management practices of the federal forest. The Interim Committee report is covered by a book-length report, and the testimony before the Natural Resources Committee covered many hours and some 200 pages of testimony. We heard testimony from many of the foremost figures in the forest management field, including Russell Getty from the New York State University and former Oregon head of the Bureau of Land Management, Mr. George Stabler, Director of Forest Research for Weyerhaeuser, Gene Little, Washington State Department of Natural Resources, Dr. David Bruce, Northwest Forest and Range Experiment Station, the U.S. Forest Service, and Mr. C.G. Jorgensen of the U.S. Forest Service. It was the conclusion that our public lands best suited for the propagation of forest products should be as intensely managed as are like private lands, while giving full consideration to the concept of multiple use. By concentrating on these key timber-producing areas, the public as a whole could make fuller utilization of the recreational and scenic values of the balance of our forests. Perhaps the most far-reaching conclusion reached by both the Interim Committee and the Committee on Natural Resources was that public forests are not in fact being managed to their fullest potential. One of the reasons for this has been the inadequate financing provided by Congress, and you have just heard a suggested solution to this problem. The purpose of HJM 4 is to focus on the needs for more intensive forestry management on our public lands. It was demonstrated time and again to the Natural Resources Committee that money invested in thinning, fertilization, additional access roads, sanitation salvages where deceased and dying timber is removed, and other forestry practices results in a far more productive forest. In summary, the committee found that the key to meeting this nation's need for wood fiber, while at the same time providing the places for outdoor recreation, is to make the maximum efficient use of the growing potential of our public forests. Passage of this resolution will help to impress upon the Secretary of Agriculture the importance to Oregonians that our forest lands need much more financing to enable the Forest Service to carry out much more intensive forest management practices on the key timber areas to best serve all of the people of this great country of ours. I urge the passage of this memorial.
Mr. Ball.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to compliment the Committee on Natural Resources for the job they did in consolidating a number of House joint memorials that dealt with this subject into something that I think that most of us can at least live with. There were certain things, as you know, Mr. Speaker, that bothered some of us very much in some of the memorials that were before the committee, and I think they've done an admirable job in separating these things, combining them, and trying to make them livable. I would call your attention to lines, starting on lines 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18, where it calls for the managers of these forests to seek to generate immediately greater income from timber sales so that investments may be made in the practice of intensive forestry. It seems to me, Mr. Speaker and members of the Assembly, that the policy that we must constantly strive for in this area of timber management is to make greater volume of timber available on a sustained yield, multiple use basis. Certainly part of the problem has been that the raw stumpage cost of timber has been too high. And certainly part of the thrust of these memorials is that if we make more timber available on a sustained yield basis, that it will drive the price of the raw stumpage down and make our lumber products more competitive and therefore improve the economy. This is the only really serious objection that I have to this memorial. I intend to support the memorial. I am going to follow it to the Senate and see if perhaps we can get some clarification of the language here so that we can get back to the resource and away from the income aspect of it.
Further discussion? There being none, those who are of the opinion that House Joint Memorial 4 should pass will answer aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion having received a majority is declared adopted. Clerk, read the next memorial.
House Joint Memorial Number 10, introduced by Representative Smith and others, Senator Boyd and others, at the request of the Interim Committee on Public Lands, memorialized to Congress to provide faster development, testing, application, progressive management techniques on forest lands under jurisdiction of federal government.
Question now arises on second reading and final passes of House Joint Memorial Number 10. Mr. Ripper.
Mr. Speaker, I move that House Joint Memorial Number 10 be sent back to the Committee on Natural Resources for technical changes needed in wording.
Mr. Ripper moves that House Joint Memorial Number 10 be returned to the Committee on Natural Resources. Further discussion on the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried. Clerk, read the next memorial.
House Joint Memorial Number 16, introduced by Representative Kenney, memorializes Congress to propose amendment to the United States Constitution abolishing electoral college and providing a direct election to president.
Question now arises on second reading and final passage of House Joint Memorial 16. Mr. Kennedy.
Well, Mr. Speaker and members, House Joint Memorial 16 memorializes the Congress of the United States, the Federal Congress, to abolish the Electoral College, to create a system, without spelling that system out, for the direct election of the President of the United States by all of the qualified voters of this nation, and thirdly requires that the successful candidate for president must receive no less than 40% of the votes cast for president to be elected. However, in the event no candidate receives 40% of all the votes cast for president, that the two candidates receiving the highest number of votes would be candidates in the second election, a provision supported strongly by all groups, by President Nixon, by former President Johnson, by just about everybody. Our present system of electing our president, in the words of the American Bar Association's Commission on Electoral College Reform, is archaic, undemocratic, complex, ambiguous, indirect, and dangerous. And I would hope that we would pass this memorial today. I think all of us remember election night 1968 as we watched our television sets. I'm sure most of us had some moments of agony and fear that, thanks to our outmoded Electoral College, that we might wake up the next morning without a president. This did not happen, fortunately. President Nixon received 43% of the vote and enough electoral votes to win the election. But in these perilous times, the United States simply cannot afford a constitutional crisis that would result in the election of a minority president, a person with fewer popular votes, or in the case of a more serious situation where our president or no one received a sufficient number of electoral votes. We simply cannot in these dangerous times afford this kind of a crisis. This particular memorial is supported back in Congress by both Republicans and Democrats, by Senator Birch Bayh, the sponsor, by Representative Gerald Ford, and I would urge its passage this morning. Thank you.
Mr. Bennett.
Members of the House, this is about the second or second or third time that this same question has been before the House, and the House has always voted it down. It would be sad indeed if it would fall to the lot of the state that this college was invented to protect and promote would be one of the states that would lead to its repeal. There's not too many people know that, but everybody should know it, especially before you vote on this. I'm going to take a few minutes' time. The Electoral College was placed in the Constitution to protect the small nations of the Union. It is set up in exactly the same manner as is the Congress of the United States. The smallest state in the Union has two senators, as has the largest, New York or California, which means that in the Congress of the United States, as a result of this act, we, although a small state, are influential. The same thing applies to this Electoral College. We still have the advantage of having two electoral votes, regardless of her size, the same as has New York. For us to give those up would be to invite maybe almost disaster. It is true that I believe that this Electoral College, insofar as the distribution of the votes are concerned, should be amended. And there is a bill now by Representative Ingalls in committee that would do that very thing. And it ought to be brought out here and passed. It provides that the Electoral College's votes in the states will be divided along the lines in proportion to the number of votes received by the candidates. As it is now, a candidate that receives one vote majority in Oregon takes the whole six electoral votes. Under Representative Ingalls' bill, if he got two-thirds of the votes, he'd take four of them. And if he got one-third of the votes, why, he'd take two of them. That would be sensible. And you would retain the great advantage that the smaller states have as a result of this law that was put into the Constitution by people that certainly knew what they were doing. That's one of the almost perfect pieces of legislation that has ever been passed. It was put in there for the purpose of keeping the United States united and to keep us from fighting one district with the other like cats and dogs. The big states trying to grab the little ones. Half a dozen big states trying to get together and run the country. That was put in there, and this college was set up for that very purpose. That's why it's there. Now, let's take a look at the Kennedy proposal. I don't know where he gets it. Suppose we have an election by popular vote. There are 13 Democratic states, 13 Democratic states that could elect every president. Well, that might be all right for the Democrats, but I don't think it would be a good thing for the country. But that's what could happen and would happen. Now, he's got another provision in this memorial of his. that he says the candidate has got to get 40% of the vote. We're apt to have, under that sort of an arrangement...
Mr. Bennett, your time is up. Mr. Bradley yields.
On a popular vote set up, we could have 100 candidates. Every senator in the United States would be a candidate for president, no question about that. And perhaps half of the governors, or maybe all of them. It might take you 5 or 10 years to get through with holding an election even. Now, there are some things that sounds reasonable, but they don't turn out to be practical. And that's one of the things that worked that way. I believe in majority rule, as I know every one of you do. But it just is not practical. At the present time, it's not practical. Maybe sometime later, when all parts of our United States are equally populated, and when the people learn a little bit better how to live together, that it might work. But it would certainly not work now. You would probably have 30 or 40 parties. Why shouldn't you? It's dog eat dog. And that would be the setup. Now let us not make that mistake. Now the large states would like to see us do it. And for a long time, some of them have been advocating a popular vote. As it is now, our electoral college votes are valuable because they're weighted. They're weighted out of proportion to our number of votes that we actually have. If this electoral college is ever repealed entirely, no candidate for president would come out here. Not to Oregon. Not for the few votes we got. He'd stop back on the Mississippi line someplace. But he'd certainly never come to Oregon. He might go to California. But certainly not here. Now we do things here every day. Sometimes I think we do them without using our heads. But if we do this thing, we're doing it in ignorance. We're putting our own foot in our own mouth. Now, how can we be that ridiculous? I remember when this was on the floor before. I think Representative Dellenbach was sitting over there. And it come down from the Republicans, and they was hot, all hot and bothered for it. And I made a talk against it, and Dellenbach joined me. And the way them Republicans sunk that memorial was nobody's business. They saw the point. Now the point is still here. If you want to turn the country over to the 13 Democratic states down south, vote for this bill. And outside of that, if enough of them vote for it, and you ever lose the Electoral College, but I think it should be amended, and Representative Ingalls has a bill down there that they can bring out any time they want it that will do the job. Now, let's not be ignorant. That Electoral College was put in there for the purpose of keeping the states together, of giving the smaller states a better chance. And it's worked ever since this country was established. And the man that cooked that up, he was a brilliant, foresighted man. Why should one legislature, or one legislator, that probably knows less than nothing about this thing, should come in here and upset it?
Mr. Day.
I won't say it again.
Speaker, I ask that you call a member to order. I think those remarks were out of line.
I'll review the remarks, Mr. Day. Mr. Ingalls.
Mr. Speaker, ladies and gentlemen of the Assembly, I too would urge the defeat of this memorial to Congress on the basis of two major reasons. One, I think popular elections for Congress lead to an irresistible pressure for national laws governing the qualification of voters. This, I think, works to the handicap of the states who should set their own qualifications for voters. The second reason, and I believe many of you will recall the recent recounts and so forth that we've had, any national election where the vote is close will incur recounts all over the country. And I'm not sure that we'll ever find out exactly who wins until the day of the inauguration, and even then we won't be sure. Thank you.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Speaker and members of the Assembly, I think it's rather presumptuous for us to outline a detailed plan of this sort and memorialize Congress with it. With all of the people who are working on this particular subject in the nature of reform, I agree, but not to the detail that's outlined in this bill. For that reason, I move that this bill be re-referred to the Committee on Elections.
Mr. Johnson moves that House Joint Memorial 16 be returned to the Committee on Elections. Mr. Stevenson.
Mr. Speaker, members of the Assembly, I support the motion to send this memorial back to the Elections Committee. I am not in disagreement with what is trying to be accomplished here. It's a laudable concept, but unfortunately, it may not be too practical. And we, of course, must recognize that we will not deal in a theoretical realm if something like this were to come into existence. As a member of the Elections Committee, I recall the memorial that representative from North Subdistrict Multnomah County referred to that relates to the same subject. It is my opinion that the two concepts that are reflected in each of these memorials could be merged in a practical way to accomplish the desired aim, and therefore I'd support the motion to send the memorial back to committee.
Mr. Mann.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to explain the reason that this memorial came in debating this motion to refer. There is a definite thrust in this country toward abolishing the Electoral College, as the representative from Lane County said in presenting his bill. In my view, the Electoral College has had more to do with keeping this country a two-party nation than any other single thing. And I would be reluctant to see it abolished, but there is this thrust, there's no question about it. And in this bill, on lines 22 through 27, it provides that the highest, the president, in case of the abolition of the college, would be elected, the highest number of votes would elect the president, whether it was a plurality or not. And it would provide that he must receive a plurality of 40%. And in my view, this is a substitute for that part of the Electoral College which has thus far preserved the two-party system in this state, or in this nation. And if we are going to be faced with the threat of abolition of the Electoral College, then we should certainly have this provision, and that's why this memorial is before you, and I would urge you to keep it on the floor.
Mr. Davis. Mr. Davis moves the previous question. The question then shall the main question now be put. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried. Debate is ceased. Mr. Johnson, do you wish to close?
No, I was just asking for a roll call on this.
Mr. Johnson asked for a roll call. Mr. Day joins. Those who are of the opinion that House Joint Memorial 16 should be returned to the Elections Committee will answer aye as your names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Akeson. Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Excused. Anionson, Carson, Gwynn, McCready, and Thornton. Those voting no. Akeson, Bow, Bradley, Cole, Davis, Day, Dugdale, Iman, Frost, Groner, Haas, Hansel, Hart, Hartung, Hurd, Ingalls, Kennedy, McPherson, Mann, Markham, McKenzie, Peck, Priestley, Richards, Ripper, Roberts, Rogers, Skelton, Stathis, Turner, Willits, Wilson-Don, Wilson-Keith, and Young.
Motion.
Absent, Howard.
Howard votes no. The motion, not having received a majority, is declared lost. Mr. Davis. Mr. Davis moves the previous question. The question is, shall the main question now be put? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The motion is carried. Debate has ceased. Mr. Kennedy, do you wish to close?
Because of the great respect I have for this House, I'm going to be very brief in my closing remarks. Even though I could talk at great length, I had the privilege a number of years ago of having this as my debate topic in high school, so I have some limited knowledge of the subject. I would simply point out two things. This does not spell out a system of direct election, except for the point that the representative from Eastern Oregon made relating to a runoff election, which everyone agrees is necessary if we're going to go to the direct election of a president. It's absolutely necessary. Everybody is in support of it, so far as I know. This present system, it has been concluded by the American Bar Association and many, many other people, does not protect the small states, but in fact does just the opposite. It only takes 11 major states to win in the Electoral College, and I can't see that this really protects the small states at all. And I would urge, because this does not spell out the specifics, that we adopt this memorial this morning. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that House Joint Memorial 16 should pass will answer aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion having received a majority is declared adopted. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Joint Memorial Number 24, introduced by the Committee on Natural Resources, memorializes Congress to cause an established annual harvest volume management program for hardwoods and to approve review of hardwood timber sales procedures.
Question now arises on second reading and final adoption of House Joint Memorial 24. Mr. Hanneman.
Mr. Speaker and members of the Assembly, in Oregon's history dealing with the federal forest lands in Oregon, the people who've been in the hardwoods industry, those who've been utilizing hardwoods in the manufacture of the widely varied products that come from Oregon, some of them nationally known, have never had an annual harvest volume for alder and other hardwood timber on the lands that they have been forced to get most of their timber from. Most of the alder and other hardwoods are on forest lands, but the federal forest people have not established an annual harvest volume for any of these people. Most of them are small operators. They're scattered throughout the state. But the Committee on Natural Resources felt that we ought to mention this particular facet along with the rest of the sustained yield and multiple use concepts expressed in the other memorials that came from the committee today. So we're directing this memorial along with the others, hoping that the Oregon legislature will express itself to this point, which is a forgotten part, really, of the forest products industry in Oregon. The memorial further states that a member will be appointed to the advisory committee to the regional forester to advise him on hardwood management practices, because there is not one member from this segment of the forest products industry on the council at this time. So we think that this memorial is one that ought to go along with the others, and hopefully the assembly here today would concur.
Further discussion, Mr. Bassett.
Mr. Speaker and members of the assembly, this memorial is rather mild when you realize what is being done by the federal government in the southwest area of Oregon. We have billions of feet of hardwood in Coos, Curry, Douglas, Jackson, Josephine County, and the federal government pays for its destruction. They reduce the cost, the price, on the harvesting of softwoods to permit the bulldozing, burning, and destruction of hardwoods to get them out of the way so they can build roads and bring out the softwoods at a lower price. And we've had no cooperation on this score. Our own Chamber of Commerce undertook a project of harvesting hardwoods, alder, chinkapin, manzanita, getting a softwood mill to slice it, cut it, sending people down to the Los Angeles area, the furniture manufacturers. They said, yes, this is something that we badly need. We bring it from thousands of miles away. but you're going to have to do some research and know how to cure it. Federal government doesn't cooperate with it, and I think that this is a step in the right direction.
Further discussion, Mr. Davis. Mr. Davis moves the previous question. The question is, shall the main question now be put? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried. Debate has ceased. Those who believe House Joint Memorial 24 should pass will answer aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried. House Joint Memorial 24 has been adopted. Mr. Speaker, Rogers.
I wish to serve notice. I'd like to vote, be on the prevailing side to reconsider the vote on House Joint Memorial number 16.
16. Did you vote on the prevailing side?
I think I must have.
Did you vote aye?
I voted aye.
All right.
Mr. Speaker.
Mrs. Peck.
I would like to request that the privileges of the House be accorded Paul Roth, a former member of the House.
Mrs. Peck asks that courtesies of the floor be extended to former Representative Paul Roth. Is there objection to the motion? If not, it's ordered by unanimous consent. Welcome, Mr. Roth. Mr. Mann.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
State your point.
I want to know the significance of Mr. Rogers, of your accepting the statement from Mr. Rogers that he voted aye on House Joint Memorial 16.
Well, the significance is that if he voted aye, he voted on the prevailing side, and therefore he is serving notice that he may, within the rules, reconsider or move to reconsider the vote by which we passed House Joint Memorial 16.
Mr. Speaker, I'm asking the chair then, since this was not a recorded vote, is this a legal action Mr. Rogers has taken?
I asked Mr. Rogers if he voted on the prevailing side. He told me he did. That is sufficient, and I accept it as that, Mr. Mann. Clerk, will read the next bill.
Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 7, introduced by Committee on Military Affairs, expressing to Mr. and Mrs. Jesse Hodges gratitude and admiration for their son, Dwayne, and sympathy for their loss.
Question now arises on second reading and final adoption of Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 7. Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Speaker and members of the House, we honor today the memory of Dwayne Daniel Hodges, one of four Oregon men aboard the ill-fated USS Pueblo, and the only American seaman to lose his life as a result of the ship's capture. Dwayne Hodges was born September 5, 1946 in Creswell, Oregon, and gave up his life on January 23, 1968 in his 21st year. His name is now added to the names of many who have given their lives in the service of this country. It is the glory of our American heritage that since the First Continental Congress, we have asked men to step forward to bear arms in defense of their liberties. Men have answered the call. It is the tragedy of that heritage that so many who fall in that defense are young men filled with the promise of life. We mourn the fallen, but we do so with pride that they had the courage and the honest conviction to stand for what they believed, for courage without conviction is nothing. For the loved ones of the fallen, the mourning is a personal, heart-rending grief that we cannot share, but we know that they too remember with pride that youth who gave them so much, and they take courage in the faith that he expressed in his last moments. As for me, I offer comfort to the bereaved in the words of another on a similar occasion. I feel how weak and fruitless must be any word of mine which should attempt to beguile you from the grief of a loss so overwhelming, but I cannot refrain from tendering you the consolation that may be found in the thanks of the Republic for which he died to save. I pray that our Heavenly Father may assuage and the anguish of your bereavement and leave you only with a cherished memory of the loved and the lost, and the solemn pride that must be yours to have laid so costly a sacrifice upon the altar of freedom. Yours very sincerely and respectfully, A. Lincoln.
Further discussion? There being none, those who are of the opinion that Senate concurrent Resolution 7 should be adopted will answer aye as your names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Akerson, Speaker.
Aye.
Excused. Anionson, Day, Gwynn, Hansel, Lang, McCready, McGilvra, Richards, Thornton, and Wilson, Keith.
Senate concurrent Resolution Number 7, having received a constitutional majority, is declared to be adopted, and let the record show by unanimous consent. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I am directed by the President to inform you that the Senate has passed Senate Bill 61, Senate Bill 62, House Bill 1272, House Bill 1275, House Bill 1276, concurred in House amendments, and repassed Senate Bill 439.
First reading, Senate bills.
Senate Bill Number 61, introduced by Senator Wilner and others, Representative Hansel and others, relating to scenic waterways.
Passed to second reading.
Senate Bill Number 62, introduced by Senator Wilner and others, Representative Hansel and others, relating to recreation trails and providing penalties.
Passed to second reading. Second reading, Senate bills.
Senate Bill Number 45, introduced by Committee on Taxation at the request of the Legislative Tax Study Committee, relating to the Western Oregon Small Tract Optional Tax, amending ORS 321.720 and others.
Referred to the Committee on Taxation.
Senate Bill Number 86, introduced by Senator Halleck at the request of the State Board of Cosmetic Therapy, relating to cosmetic therapy, amending ORS 691.011.
Referred to the Committee on Public Health.
Senate Bill Number 128, introduced by Committee on Election at the request of Secretary of State Special Committee, relating to petition and nomination, providing penalties.
Referred to the Committee on Elections.
Senate Bill Number 162, introduced by Committee on Taxation at the request of State Tax Commission, relating to local budgets, tax supervision, conservation commission, amending ORS 294.411 and others, declaring an emergency.
Referred to the Committee on Taxation.
Senate Bill Number 174, introduced by Senator Husband, relating to taxes imposed upon a measure by net income, creating new provisions, amending ORS 318.030, prescribed an effective date.
Referred to the Committee on Taxation.
Senate Bill Number 282, introduced by Committee on Commerce and Utilities at the request of the Public Utility Commission of Oregon, relating to safety facilities used in connection with the transmission distribution of gas by pipeline.
Referred to the Committee on State and Federal Affairs.
Senate Bill Number 413, introduced by Senator Failey, relating to certificate registration, creating new provisions, amending ORS 247.145, declaring an emergency.
Referred to the Committee on Elections.
Senate Bill Number 504, introduced by Senator Hoyt, Representative Howard, the Question Correction Division, relating to youth care centers, amending ORS 420.875 and others.
Referred to the Committee on Planning and Development. Third reading, Senate bills.
Senate Bill Number 138, introduced by Committee on Financial Affairs, the Question Department of Commerce Corporation Division, relating to assumed business names, creating new provisions, amending ORS 648.010 and others, repealing ORS 648.035, declaring an emergency.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 138. Mr. Dugdale.
Good afternoon, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Members of the Assembly, Senate Bill 138 is quite complex, and yet it's quite simple. It's a housekeeping bill from the Department of Commerce. It's passed by the Senate Finance Committee and the House Financial Affairs Committee. The current assumed business name laws amendments have been designed to accomplish the following administrative aims by this bill. Number one, to delete the reference permitting the filing of a pre-existing county registration regarding of name conflict if filed by July 1, 1964. This provision is now obsolete. Number two, to strengthen precautions against the filing of conflicting names by including for reference those names currently filed with the insurance commissioner and the superintendent of banks, in addition to those filed with the corporation commissioner. Number three, to establish the framework and procedures of the renewal system by A, requiring that the commissioner give timely notice for first-class mail by first-class mail to registrants, B, requiring registrants to submit a report and fees every fifth year, C, requiring the commissioner to forward a final notice by certified mail to registrants who have failed to respond to the initial notice, and D, providing cancellation authority for failure to so report. It should be noted that the present statute provides that all notices may be forwarded by certified mail. The proposed amendment will affect an estimated savings of $5,000 by requiring that the only final notice be sent by certified mail. To enable the corporation commissioner to make changes to existing assumed business name registrations where the registrant is either a domestic or foreign corporation, who has filed the necessary documents with our corporation section changing its name, establishing a new name as a result of a merger, having withdrawn or filed articles of dissolution. To clarify the levying fees so that these are only raised as a result of an actual filing rather than an application to do so. The renewal program is effective July the 1st, 1969, and approximately 27,000 registrations will be renewing in July and August. Preparation of this material must commence in March, hence the necessity for the emergency clause. I respectfully ask your consideration in passing Senate Bill 138.
Further discussion? There being none, those who are of the opinion that Senate Bill 138 should pass will answer aye as your names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Akeson. Aye. Young. Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Excused. Anionson. Day. Gwynn. Hansel. Lang. McCready. McGilvray. Richards. Thornton. And Wilson Keith. Those voting no. Hanneman.
Senate Bill 138, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill number 139, introduced by Committee on Financial Affairs of the Court of the Department of Commerce Corporation Division, relating to securities, creating new provisions, many orders, 59.175, and others, declaring an emergency.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 139. Mr. Cole.
Mr. Speaker, members of the House, this bill pertains to the renewal of registrations for broker-dealers, investments, and advisors that are now registered through the Corporation Department. Present law provides that all registrations expire on June 30th of each year, and this has been creating an increasing hardship on the Corporation Department in handling the renewals on June 30th of each year. The amendments in the bill, particularly those sections 1 through 5, provide that all registrations will remain in force until canceled, and they set up a system of staggering the renewals with a proration of fees for the first year only. From then on, the renewals will take place in a certain month during the course of the year. These sections also provide for a system of notification, and each registrant will be notified 30 days in advance of the renewal time so he can get his application in, and if he fails to do that within that time, there's another 10-day final notice before his registration is dropped. Section 6 of the bill amends the law which specifies the grounds under which the corporation commissioner can deny, suspend, or revoke a registration of these people. Presently, the law provides that the commissioner can deny the registration only in the event of fraud, illegality, or an act of dishonesty involving the conduct in the securities business, and therefore if someone has been guilty of any of these types of acts in another professional capacity, such as a insurance salesman or attorney or a real estate agent or any other professional capacity, the commissioner has no basis for denying him a registration in the securities field. So this amendment would permit denial of such an application if the person has been guilty of misconduct in other professional fields, and I think it's a good statute to pass.
Further discussion? There being none, those who are of the opinion that Senate Bill 139 should pass will answer aye as your names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Akeson. Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Excused. Anionson. Day. Gwynn. Hansel. Lang. McCready. McGilvray. Richards. Thornton. Wilson. Keith.
Senate Bill 139, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill number 187, introduced by Committee on Judiciary at the Court of Corporation Commissioner, relating to nonprofit corporations, amending Order 61.015.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 187. Mr. Young.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of the Assembly, Senate Bill 187 amends the existing nonprofit corporation law and has come from the Senate passing unanimously. The bill was requested, actually, by the Multnomah County Law Library to correct a deficiency in their corporate structure. The library was organized as a corporation under the then-existing, or the law that existed in 1890, and the corporation was authorized to issue corporate stock, and substantially all that stock is now held by members of the Multnomah County Bar Association. There has been some uncertainty as to whether or not this particular corporation is now a nonprofit corporation or a corporation for profit, and it's the desire of all the parties concerned to clear up any question as to the status of that corporation, and therefore Section 3 of the bill, which starts at page 28, is designed to permit that law library to file amended or restated articles conforming it to the present nonprofit law. Commissioner Healy of the Corporation Commissioner testified in support of this measure.
Further discussion? There being none, those who are of the opinion that Senate Bill 187 should pass will answer aye as your names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Akeson. Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Excused. Anunson, Day, Gwynn, Hansel, Lang, McCready, McGilver, Richards, Thornton, Wilson, Keith.
Senate Bill 187, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
Senate Bill number 189, introduced by Committee on Judiciary, at the request of Corporation Commissioner, relating to corporations, amending orders 57.045 and others.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 189. Mr. Delschneider.
Mr. Speaker, members of this hungry assembly, the principal purpose of this bill is to permit the Corporation Division to refuse the filing of an assumed business name or articles of incorporation if the name designated in those documents is the same as or deceptively similar to a corporation whose articles are on file with either the insurance commissioner or the superintendent of banks. The basic problem is that at present, all such documents for insurance companies are filed only with the insurance commissioner, and all documents relating to banks are filed with the superintendent of banks. This has been the practice for some years, as each of these divisions have made available to the corporation commissioner lists of corporations filed with them. However, it was felt by the Corporation and Partnership Law Committee of the Oregon State Bar that this authority should be included expressly by statute. Frank Healy, our Corporation Commissioner, was the only one testifying or explaining the administrative aims of this bill. I hope the Assembly will concur with our committee approval of this bill.
Further discussion? There being none, those who are of the opinion that Senate Bill 189 should pass will answer aye as your names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Akeson.
Aye.
Excused. Anunson, Day, Gwynn, Hansel, Lang, McCready, McGilver, Richards, Thornton, Wilson, Keith. Those voting no. Akeson.
Senate Bill 189, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
Senate Bill number 304, introduced by Community Alcoholic Control, to request the Oregon Liquor Commission relating to alcoholic liquors, amending ORS 471.780.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 304. Mr. Priestley.
Senate Bill 304 deletes the requirement that two commissioners each must sign the purchase orders for alcoholic liquor when purchased by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. It requires instead that written approval of purchase orders be made by two commissioners. There were no votes in the Senate, passed unanimously, I believe, in the State and Federal Affairs, would save administration costs with the OLCC, would not increase consumption of alcoholic beverages. Move the adoption.
Further discussion? There being none, those who are of the opinion that Senate Bill 304 should pass will answer aye as your names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Akeson, Anunson, Bassett, Bennett, Bowe, Bowe, Bradley, Brown, Carson, Chouinard, Cole, Carruthers, Davis, Day, Dietering, Delschneider, Dugdale, Elliott, Hyman, Frost, Graham, Groner, Gwynn, Haas, Hanneman, Hansel, Hart, Hartung, Hurd, Howard, Mr. Speaker.
Aye. Bowe votes aye.
Excused. Anunson, Day, Gwynn, Hansel, Lang, McCready, McGilver, Richards, Thornton, and Wilson Keith. Those voting no. Bennett.
Senate Bill 304, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Other business of the Senate? Other business of the House? Announcements. Mr. Bassett.
Highways at 1:45. We have six bills to hear.
Dr. Carruthers.
Public Health at 1:30.
Public Health at 1:30. Mr. Hartung.
Planning and Development 1:30.
Skelton.
Yesterday I placed on the desk of the Democratic members an announcement of the dinner for Senator Fred Harris in Eugene this weekend, and I erroneously referred to it as Saturday night. It is on Friday night, tomorrow night.
We'll all be there, Mr. Skelton. Tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, the youth legislature will meet here in the chambers. If the members wish to, they may clean the top of their desk and place those articles on top of your file cabinets. We would hope to have the youth legislature out of the chambers by 9:30 in the morning when we plan to convene. Mr. Martin.
Mr. Speaker, tonight at 7:30 in Room 6, there will be a hearing on the Department of Social Services that should be a very interesting hearing. There will be a number of witnesses. It will be very informative.
Further announcements. Mr. Bennett, the desk is clear.
Speaker, I move to adjourn.
Mr. Benham moves we adjourn until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow morning. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. Motion carried. We stand adjourned.
House of Representatives, 89th calendar day, Friday, April 11, 1969.
Morning. House will come to order. The clerk will call the roll.
Akeson.
The invocation this morning by Reverend Arthur Brust, Riviera Baptist Church.
Let us pray. Lord Jesus, we stand to join our hearts in prayer in our acknowledgement of our great need of thy presence. We know that in ourselves we're not sufficient to meet the problems of today. We acknowledge that a government of the people and by the people is not good enough. We pray for a government of the people of God, a government that seeks to achieve peace and righteousness that will exalt the entire nation and above all, thy name. Strengthen our conviction that thy hand is still leading us in working out thy purposes locally and in all the world. Forgive us our confusion and our honest perplexity. Remind us again that thou hast not resigned or changed. May it ever be in our hearts and not just our coins. In God we trust. In Jesus' name, amen.
As honorary pages this morning, we have with us Mark Lyman and Jeff Schunk, guests of the speaker, Dana DeYoung and Diane Hadley, guest of Representative Davis. Also, join me in wishing Rod McKenzie happy birthday this morning. Also with us are several students from Baker High School, also some of the faculty. A very special guest is with them, Miss Susanna Vadiman, who is an exchange student from Argentina. We welcome all of you young people here this morning. Baker students are guests of Representative Tom Young. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate. First reading of petitions, memorials, and resolutions. Standing committee reports.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee on Financial Affairs, to whom is referred to House Bill 1824, having had the same under consideration, respectfully report it back with the recommendation that it do pass. Mr. Speaker, your Committee on Financial Affairs, to whom is referred Senate Bill 201, having had the same under consideration, respectfully report it back with the recommendation that it do pass. Mr. Speaker, your Committee on Financial Affairs, to whom is referred Senate Bill 202, having had the same under consideration, respectfully report it back with the recommendation that it do pass. Mr. Speaker, your Committee on Financial Affairs, to whom is referred Senate Bill 203, having had the same under consideration, respectfully report it back with the recommendation that it do pass.
Special committee reports, propositions, and motions. Dr. Graham.
Mr. Speaker, members of the Assembly, I wish to move for reconsideration of House Bill 1159.
Dr. Graham, you served notice and you voted on the prevailing side.
That's correct.
Mr. Graham moves that the House reconsider the vote by which House Bill 1159 passed yesterday. Mr. Graham.
Mr. Speaker, members of the Assembly, as you will probably recall, this was a very close vote, 29-29, for referral yesterday morning to judiciary. At that time, we had several members absent, one of which is here today, and I think he would like very much to have an opportunity to vote on this bill, as I would appreciate it if he had the opportunity also. There are many reasons that I would like to speak on this bill. However, I think by my very nature, my intention could be misinterpreted. Therefore, I will leave the floor to those others who wish to speak on the bill.
Further discussion? Those who are of the opinion that House Bill 1159 should be reconsidered will answer aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion carried. The bill has been reconsidered. Dr. Graham?
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I will leave the floor to those others who wish to speak to the bill.
There should be a motion for repassage.
I wish to move to refer House Bill 1159 to judiciary.
Mr. Graham moves that House Bill 1159 be referred to the Committee on Judiciary. Discussion, Mr. Penn.
In support of that motion, Mr. Speaker, I wasn't here yesterday, as Mr. Graham alluded to. I'm very concerned about one particular subject with relation to this bill. There's a very authoritarian source of information that's available on this, directly an issue with the question this bill touches. The source I'm talking about was a report authorized by Congress in 1967 as one of the portions of the Social Security amendments. On December 28th, 1968, Secretary of the Health, Education, and Welfare, Wilbur J. Cohen, delivered a comprehensive report to Congress entitled Independent Practitioners Under Medicare. It's my feeling that this report is not generally known. I feel that a majority of the committee members never really had the benefit of reading it, and that this ought to be studied very carefully restudied by the Judiciary Committee and their evaluations placed under it, on it. Very briefly, the report goes into the subjects of licensing chiropractors in various states. It also talks about accreditation of chiropractic institutions. The recommendations of the report, which is several hundred pages long, basically state the chiropractic theory and practice.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
State your point.
I don't believe this report has anything whatsoever to do with the motion to re-refer this bill to a committee, nor, in fact, to the bill itself.
Well, Mr. Penn is bringing new information with respect to the motion to refer to the committee and the reasons why I suppose the committee should reinvestigate this problem.
I believe this would go to the heart of the issue, or one of the issues that the Judiciary Committee would study, and I would hopefully that they would investigate this. Anyway, one of the recommendations the report made, and one of the basis is that the chiropractic theory and practice are not based on any basic knowledge related to health, disease, and health care. The issue here was whether chiropractors should be included under Medicare. That was the nature of the report. The overwhelming advice and opinion the report gave that they should not. And I submit that's exactly the same issue we have here. Should they or should they not be included under welfare? I think this will shed a great deal of light on our exact issue. This report was so well received and so much basis was put on it that New Jersey recently passed almost identical legislation to this we have on the floor, and the governor of New Jersey vetoed the legislation on the basis of this health, education, and welfare report.
Mr. Mann.
Mr. Penn, yield to a question.
Mr. Penn, will you yield to a question? He will.
Yes, I will. Is this a medical report you're referring to?
No, there were on the committee that put the report together, there were doctors, but there were also chiropractors and lay people.
It had to do with public health.
Yes.
Mr. Speaker, another question?
Another question, Mr. Penn.
Why then, Mr. Penn, don't you suggest that this bill be re-referred to the Committee on Public Health? What qualifies the Judiciary Committee to deal in this area?
Particular qualifications of the Judiciary Committee? I think the whole theory and practice of chiropractics is governed by statute here, and this goes a great deal into the subject of what they really do and how it relates to our statute.
Mr. Speaker?
Mr. Mann.
I move an amendment to the motion to refer to Judiciary to make it read refer to Public Health.
Mr. Mann moves that the motion be amended to substitute Public Health for Judiciary. Discussion on the motion. Mr. Young.
Will Representative Penn yield to a question?
Mr. Penn, will you yield to a question? He will yield.
Yes, I will.
Representative Penn, in view of this study that you made and the report you've examined, does it set out methods of treatment for various ailments or conditions?
Yes.
Will you yield to another question?
Another question, Mr. Penn. He will yield.
Does it set out how they treat, for instance, tonsillitis or appendicitis?
Yes.
State your point, Mr. Mann.
This is not to the point of my motion.
What is the point of your motion, Mr. Mann? To send it to public health? All right. Mr. Young?
Will Mr. Penn yield another question?
Another question, Mr. Penn? He will yield.
What does the report say how the chiropractor might treat appendicitis and tonsillitis?
As to tonsillitis, the physician sterilizes his finger, places the tip of his finger on the inflamed tonsil. He strokes downward using slight pressure. The amount of pressure is controlled by the tolerance of the patient.
Further discussion? Mrs. Peck.
I'm sorry I didn't get out of the telephone booth in time to ask for a roll call on the reconsideration of this vote, Mr. Speaker. I'm opposed to sending this back to the... I'm opposed to Mr. Mann's move to send this to the Public Health Committee, and I'm opposed to sending it to Judiciary Committee, mainly because most of the people who have been so opposed to this bill are serving on those committees. Not most of them, but some of them. And we took up, I mentioned clearly the report that Mr. Penn is referring to. I'm sorry that it was unfortunate for all that he had to be away from his desk the time of the discussion and voting on this bill yesterday. But this report, as I told you, came out from an ad hoc committee that was made up of 8 people, 5 of them doctors and 5 of them medically associated with the doctors. This was the committee. And as I mentioned yesterday, that one time this group was fighting Medicare itself. Since then, they have seen the light and come along and are working with Medicare and helping it to be a better program. At the time these investigations were being made, they were against Medicare and referred to it as socialized medicine. So I think this is just an issue now of people who are opposed to this, of trying to get... I said yesterday I have the highest respect for the Medical Association. I still do, but there are reservations about a move like this that is clearly one of discrimination and nothing else. As I said before, these so-called quacks with their educational background should have a right to practice within the scope of their license. And if it's thought that they shouldn't, then the people so interested in getting rid of them should introduce legislation that would outlaw them. I'm against this bill being referred to any committee. I think that it should stand on its own merits. It was voted on yesterday, and I think the vote should stand.
Mr. Skelton.
I voted for this bill yesterday, but I'm going to vote to refer it to any committee today, and this is the reason why. I wasn't informed about the full application of the way in which the bill is drafted. And I must say that I'm sorry to have to say that I believe that there are some real serious problems with the drafting of the bill. The way it's drafted right now is that it's so broad that it takes in the workman's compensation system of this state. And it means that you can read any agency, not only welfare, but workman's compensation as well. I have conferred with the State Compensation Department and the Workman's Compensation Board with people in this area, and they are concerned about the application of the definition. I know that it's the intent not to make it this broad. I'm aware that it's the intent to get at the welfare cases, and I don't want to even discuss that. I'm just saying that the brush with which the amendment has been made is so broad that it says any agency. And for that reason, I think that it has a real serious defect in it.
Move the previous question.
Mr. Thornton moves the previous question. The question now shall the main question now be put. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried. Debate has ceased. Mr. Mann, you wish to close.
Mr. Speaker, I made this motion solely for the purpose of illustrating to the Assembly that the Motion to re-refer to judiciary was an attempt to kill the bill.
Those who are of the opinion that public health should be substituted for judiciary in the main motion will signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Chairs in doubt, clerk will call the roll.
Akeson. No. Anionson.
Speaker.
Excused. Bradley. And Rogers. Those voting no. Akeson. Carson, Chenard, Cole, Davis, Day, Dietering, Delschneider, Dugdale, Elliott, Frost, Gwynn, Haas, Hansel, Hart, Hartung, Howard, Johnson, Kennedy, McPherson, Markham, Martin, McKenzie, Meeker, Peck, Penn, Richards, Ripper, Roberts, Stathis, Stevenson, Turner, Wilson, Keith, Wingard, Young, and Mr. Speaker, absent, Anionson, and Crothers.
The motion not having received a majority is declared lost. For the discussion, Mr. Davis. Mr. Davis moves a previous question. The question is, shall amend question now be put? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. Debate has ceased. Mr. Graham, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to say in closing that I think there are serious defects in the bill. I think they've been pointed out by other individuals. I think this Cohen report is something that everyone should read to be aware and educated as to the healing arts in the United States, and I urge your consideration of that report. It's informative and educational, and will give everyone some new enlightenment. I wish to oppose this bill and send it to judiciary because of several of these aspects. One more is the insurance requirements requiring insurance companies to include various healing arts even though they may not desire to do so, such as the Oregon Physician Service, OPS, which many of you belong to. I urge your support of this motion to refer to judiciary.
Mr. Chenard asks for a roll call. Mr. Roberts joins. Those who are of the opinion that House Bill 1159 should be referred to the Committee on Judiciary will answer aye. Your names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Akeson. Mr. Speaker, those voting no, Akeson, Bassett, Bennett, Bowe, Dugdale, Elliott, Frost, Haas, Hanneman, Hartung, Hurd, Howard, Kennedy, Lang, Mann, McKenzie, Meeker, Peck, Roberts, Rogers, Stevenson, Turner, Wilson, Keith, and Mr. Speaker.
The motion to send House Bill 1159 to judiciary, having received a majority, is declared passed. State your point.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I would. We've started off in a very bad mood, and we had a lot of good bills before us today. I wish we could get in that good mood we had yesterday.
You'll help us a lot, Mr. Priestley. Further propositions and motions?
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Rogers.
I move that the House reconsider the vote by which they passed House Joint Memorial Number 16.
Mr. Rogers moves that the House reconsider the vote by which House Joint Memorial 16 was adopted yesterday. Mr. Rogers?
Mr. Speaker, members of the Assembly, I make this move because I think there was a little confusion about the vote. I think it would be more meaningful to have this back, to have a roll call vote on it, and this is one of the reasons why I make this, so that we do have a clear-cut decision on this, because it is a rather important memorial.
Mr. Kennedy.
I would support the motion to reconsider the vote. I think that every member of this House certainly should be on record as to whether or not he favors the popular election of the President of the United States, and so I would support Mr. Rogers' motion because I think it's important to the people of Oregon that they know how we stand on this terribly important issue.
Further discussion? Being none, those who believe that we should reconsider the vote by which HJM was adopted, HJM 16 was adopted yesterday, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion is carried. Mr. Rogers?
It is parliamentary inquiry. It's now before us for discussion.
No, it is not. We will have to have a motion for repassage or a motion to return to committee.
You put me in an awkward position.
Would Mr. Rogers yield to Mr. Kennedy?
I move that, let's see, what kind of move?
Better move pretty soon, Mr. Rogers, I'll tell you that.
I move that, I hate to do this, I move we repass House Bill H.J.M. 16.
Mr. Rogers moves that H.J.M. 16 be readopted. Discussion on the motion. Being none, those of you of the opinion that H.J.M. 16 should be adopted will answer aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.